This is the Starting Five, and today on the Starting Five, it has become an annual tradition that at All-Star Break, we talk to this guest. He is the captain of the Brooklyn and Western New York curling team. He is the gold, silver, and bronze medal analyst for your Toronto Raptors. He is Jack Armstrong.
James, that's quite an introduction. Thank you.
Well, you know, I always try and, like, I try and come up with something that fits with the times and puts you over to the level that you deserve to be, and I think with the Olympics and all that, that worked out well.
I like it, and I've had a lot of fun watching it so far, the Olympics, and it's nice to have a little relaxation here on All-Star Weekend and catching a little bit of that as well, so it's a fun time of year, and spring's around the corner, baseball, and NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, the best time of year is coming up.
Yeah, and the curling reference for people, that comes from Raptors TV back in the day. They did a thing with Jack and a bunch of the guys curling, and that's what made me think of the curling team.
Yeah, well, I had a great time. I've done it twice, actually, on our trips to Minnesota when we play the Timberwolves. We've curled at the St. Paul Curling Club, and I've had a great time doing it. It's actually a lot more difficult a sport than it looks like on TV. And particularly after you've had a few pints while you're doing it. So it's, but it's a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Well, we'll make the transition this way. A lot of people maybe needed a few pints to watch the events of last night on Saturday night at the NBA All-Star Game. Many a person on that thing you're not on, Twitter and social media in general, are not happy with the NBA and what they presented as the dunk contest. And just All-Star Saturday Night in general, to me, it just doesn't seem as special anymore, and I don't like it. For me, that used to be, like, when Vince Carter was in the dunk contest, that was must-see television for me. At the time I was working at a college radio station, I've told the story to people before, we all gathered up and watched it on a TV, and the actual studio was, like, down a level. We were so loud during that dunk contest, they could hear us on air. I didn't feel that way once last night.
I would agree with you. And you know, the issue right now is how do you fix it? I think more than a reaction to, you know, it wasn't at its best. How do we fix it? And I think that folks are having a lot to say about this right now, and I don't disagree with them. The question is, you know, has it gotten to the point where we've seen every possible dunk you can have? I don't know what else you can do. I mean, that's the challenge of it right now. I mean, I think Paul George is a name guy. John Wall's a name guy. I mean, we had some pretty big name guys that did it. And still, you know, I mean, and John Wall's dunk was sensational. I mean, Paul George's dunk was sensational. I think it's more so the concept of what it was, you know, the East versus West and all that. I'd rather, you know, and that's fun maybe as a lead-in, and then you say, okay, let's pick the top East dunker and the top West dunker and have them dunk off that. So I just think it's one of those things that, again, needs to be tweaked. The entire spectacle needs to be tweaked, and particularly with it coming to Toronto in 2 years, I think from a you know, Raptor perspective and a league perspective, I'm sure there'll be discussion on, you know, how can we make this bigger and better. And it's still a great weekend. I've been at a few of them, and it's a lot of fun. It's more so than anything else a celebration of the sport. But nonetheless, I do think that there's many components that have to be fixed. I'd love to see our best players play one-on-one. I'd love to see our best players maybe play pig or horse and, you know, just some fun things like that as well. But, you know, if you're asking your best players in the world to play one-on-one, they're going to get awfully competitive, and the concern is, do they get hurt? So, but I think a pig competition or horse or whatever would be a lot of fun. I'm sure there's other things that bigger minds than mine will think of to make it better, but there's no question that does it need to be blown up? I wouldn't say that. I would say it needs to be tweaked on a number of different fronts.
But the thing, and you touched on it. When I was younger, the All-Star Game was about the very best on that night. We saw Larry Bird competing. We saw Michael Jordan. We saw Dominique Wilkins. We saw Dr. J. You know what we see today? We see LeBron James in a fashionable suit watching this stuff, along with Dwayne Wade and some other names I could throw in there. I'm not just picking on the Miami Heat here. Kevin Durant, although he's been in a few things, but there's a lot of big names that just sit there on the sidelines to look good. That's not why they're there.
Well, I think the NBA, though, obviously these are all things that you could have collectively bargained in the last agreement, and you didn't. And to me, I look at it and I say, you know, for these guys, I mean, they're night in, night out carrying the league. And I think if you're going to ask them to do these other things, it's a partnership. I mean, the league always says it's a partnership. If it is a partnership, then we need to partner. And therefore, what's good for the league? I think you need to sit down and say, okay, we're going to get LeBron James to take part in these competitions. All right, we'll make a significant donation to the charity of his choice in order for him to do it. If that's what it's going to take, then that's what it's going to take. But to me, I think that, you know, we got to come up with something that gets everybody on the same page and gets everybody understanding how important it is for everybody, for the league. It's a win-win. So I agree with you. I mean, I've said this for years that all these different contests that we have, our best players need to take part in it. Yet, at the same time, I think you need to have that discussion. And I applaud Paul George, who's one of the best players in the league right now. I applaud John Wall. I applaud Damian Lillard. I applaud some of, DeMar DeRozan, a lot of the guys that are all-stars that took part in these competitions. So we just got to get buy-in from everybody. And I think it's one of those things where you hope that an event like Friday night and Saturday night maybe causes people to say, hey, we need to fix this a little bit more.
And DeMar DeRozan went in an event that wasn't really his cup of tea. Like it could have gone badly for DeMar DeRozan in what he picked to go in, and I was happy it didn't. But let's make the transition right there. DeMar DeRozan, we're recording this before the All-Star game, just so people know, so we don't know how he'll end up doing on Sunday. But this half season for DeMar DeRozan has really been just amazing, and I can't help but root for this kid. I mean, I met him up in Ottawa in his rookie year. He was a wide-eyed kid, and he's come so far, and some of the things we're seeing this year, Jack, are really, like, next-level stuff. When this team gets down and they need a basket, DeMar DeRozan, more times than not, is the guy making that basket. He's also the guy that I think you've mentioned it on a broadcast or two. He gathers the team together, and he's the one being that voice trying to rally this team and rally the troops, and that's huge steps for this young man.
Yeah, no, he's taken major steps. He's really maturing. He's gone from being a talent to a player. You know, he's gone from being a guy who's a great slasher, athletic, high-flying, to a guy that's developed into somebody that has gotten some polish in his game now. And to me, that's what it's all about. He's crossed the line now and become a player that you look at and you say, okay, he took on a double team and he made the right pass out of the double. He shot it when he should have shot. He passed it when he should have passed it. He put it on the floor when he should have put it on the floor. Again, he's becoming more of a well-rounded, polished player. And to me, that's a sign of a guy that it's all starting to come together now for him. And it's an encouraging thing. And he's one of my favorite guys of all time in Raptor history. He's just a really nice young man. I have a lot of respect for him. He's a real gentleman. And he's a self-made man. This guy doesn't get to this point right now without him paying the price and putting the work in. I mean, he's a hungry guy. He's a gym rat. He loves the game. He's a guy that, he's in love with the sport. And, I'm really happy for him because does he have limitations? Absolutely. Is he the best player in the league? No, he isn't. But he's emerging. He's becoming a really good player.
And the one person who you can just see how much all this winning means is DeMar DeRozan. That last game before the All-Star break, he did the interview after the game, and he had a smile on his face that could light up a whole entire room, and it was simply about the fact that this team is winning basketball games.
No, I agree with you. I mean, he's paid his dues, and he's lost a lot of games, you know, and he's been very frustrated. And I think the light is coming on for him. I think he sees what's going on around him. And I think he really appreciates what they've done in terms of the teammates they brought in to play with him. These guys compliment him well, and he compliments them well. And I just think that when you look at his team right now and you look at him, I think they mesh nicely. And, again, they're far from there. They're not close to a championship team, as we well know. They got a long, long, long way to go. But it's refreshing that at least things are at least 52 games in are headed in the right direction.
And he was one of many people that the Rudy Gay trade had such a positive impact. I got to say, when that Raptor team was 6-12 and Rudy Gay was on this roster, they were not a fun team to watch. It was a lot of selfishness, not just on Gay's part, but I think on others' part, because Rudy Gay was taking so many shots. And this team has been night and day since. So many people have benefited from that. DeMar, I think, is one of them. Also, another guy, though, and maybe the most surprising of the people it has, is Kyle Lowry. Because I think a lot of people expected Kyle Lowry, once Rudy Gay was gone, to check out and maybe be shipped out as well. Neither of those things have happened. And Kyle Lowry, he's not going to be playing on Sunday in the All-Star game, but you can make the strong argument that he probably should have been.
Oh, I agree with that. And no, he's played exceptionally well, and he should be in the All-Star game. He's been their best player, quite frankly. And you talk about MVP of the Raptors so far, I would say it would be Lowry. I think he's the guy that has been their heart and soul, has been the guy that's really set them up into good situations, clutch shots, big defensive plays, big rebounds, big steals, taking charges, just the incredible will to win. So I would say right now, if I had to pick one guy who's been the best player night in, night out for Toronto, and who would, again, where would they be without him? I think they'd be in big trouble without him. And so to me, that says a lot. I think that he's had a great year. Now it's 52 games in, and people are going to start going, let's give him, you know, a five-year deal and $100 million or whatever. That, you know, that stuff's all premature. Let's let it breathe. Let's play itself out. Let's see how things shake out the remainder of the regular season and the playoffs. And market value will determine that. And the Raptors are in a position where they have a guy that's, you know, they have a lot of playing time and a starting spot for him on a good team. And I'm sure, you know, they'll come to a happy medium where it'll work for Kyle and it'll work for them. But it'll work for both sides. It's not going to be an unreasonable thing. And you got to play it out. And here's the other thing. I mean, and here's the thing you always got to caution with guys. And this is not a knock on Kyle. It's a reality. You know, he's in a contract year. So, you know, you always have to say, okay, well, is the guy that I'm signing, is he going to be that same guy over the next 3 to 4 years? So you want to make sure of that. And I think the Raptors are wise to just kind of let it breathe and see it through. And I think Kyle's wise as well. Is if he keeps playing at a high level, it only improves his value.
And that's the thing, though. For fans that are not all caught up in the winning, Kyle Lowry is the biggest concern because the Raptors don't control him. Some Raptor fans say, well, what's to say he doesn't do exactly what Chris Bosh did and walk away? Other Raptor fans will say, well, you know what? Jose Calderon had a great contract year. He got a lot of money, and look what happened there. And you started to touch on all of that stuff. But really, he becomes the key to all this, doesn't he? Because at the start of the year, the debate was, does this team play for the draft or not play for the draft? Or if you want to use the phrase tank, go ahead. That was the debate. That debate ended once the Rudy Gay trade happened and this team started playing the way they did. I think now it's all about Kyle Lowry, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that'll be something that'll play itself out in time. And, you know, will resolve itself. And, you know, here's the thing. What was Kyle Lowry before this year? You know, and I guess a guy that had issues with coaches, was inconsistent, conditioning was an issue sometimes, but we all knew that he was really talented, and it's all come together for him this year. So I think when you make any decision like this, you have to make it with the entire picture in mind, not just 52 games. So, and where you think the needle's pointed. You know, do you think this is a guy that is going to really take off even further? Is this where he's at his best? You know, where is he going to be in a few years? You know, those are big decisions you got to make money-wise. And obviously, if he were to walk, you have even more cap space. You know, so it's just one of those things where, again, I think the most important thing that people underrate is how qualified Masai Ujiri and, you know, Jeff Weltman and his staff are. I mean, they have been having discussions with Kyle and Kyle's representatives all along. I mean, there's an open dialogue. So I think both sides kind of know what the other wants and where things are going. And, you know, so I don't think there'll be crazy surprises in terms of the relationship between the Raptors and Kyle Lowry. It's going to be more so, let's work something out that makes sense for both. And obviously other teams might come in and try to blow the Raptors out of the water, and that very well might happen. But you have to do what's right for your franchise, not only short but long term, and it has to make sense for everybody.
It is a tricky situation, though, because of the position he plays, right? Because being the point guard, he's controlling a lot of what's going on with the Raptors offense, which has been pretty great at times during this run since the Rudy Gay trade. And I think a lot of the success of DeMar DeRozan can be in part credited to Kyle Lowry. Finding a guy that fits as well as he's fit is not going to be an easy task if he doesn't end up re-signing.
No, it's a legitimate point, because with all due respect to Gravis Vasquez, who I think is a really good player, you look at the impact that Lowry makes defensively with his steals, the charge, taking charges, the rebounds, the hustle plays, and then obviously what he's done as a playmaker and a clutch shot maker. I don't know if Vasquez can match that. You know, so would you have to go out on the open market and get something like that? Yeah, what's on the market? You know, that's all for debate. But yeah, I mean, those are, again, but those are things that'll all play themselves out in time. And, again, I just like the approach that Masai has taken, because it's just let it breathe. You know, he's got to prove something, Kyle Lowry, to his current employer and the other 29 teams in the league. And on the other hand, you know, Masai's got to figure out what he has. And more importantly, I think if you look at how the Raptors have structured the contracts, you know, it's not about even this year or next year. It's a few years from now where they've really tried to create a situation with the Andrea Bargnani trade and with the Rudy Gay trade, and more importantly, how the contract is set up right now, that, you know, they're going to try to really make positioned in a few years for the, you know, 2015-2016 season, where they're going to have big-time cap space. So I just think it's a process, and they're not going to win an NBA championship this year. We all know that. But I think they've made great strides, and if they can stay healthy, it could be a potentially, fingers crossed, maybe a fun spring. But, you know, again, this is not just about that process. It's more about trying to put something together that'll be durable, long-lasting, and sensible that, you know, you can really have some fun with for a long period of time.
And one last thing before we jump out of this conversation about Kyle Lowry. The trade deadline's obviously coming up, and there was talk of trading him, but I think that's long and past. But if the Raptors keep him, is that an indication of anything, or is it just a case of what you're saying, letting the situation breathe, and we've got a team that's playing really well, and we don't want to give that up?
I just think right now, I think you, I would agree. I think you owe it to Dwayne Casey and his coaching staff. You owe it to this team. Unless you get something that just is so absolutely tremendous in terms of a trade offer, you listen to everything. But I think more than else, you either stand pat or maybe you add a little something. But again, in order to add, you have to subtract. And what are you going to give up in order to get it? So I think this is a year that nobody expected. And yet they have a tremendous amount of stuff to prove in the final 30 games. There's still a lot of people around the league who are very, very skeptical of whether they can hold off the Nets and whether they could even get a third or fourth seed. You know, there's a lot of question about that. So only time will tell. The first two games out of the shoot at Washington and then Chicago at home are, you know, let's not kid ourselves. I wouldn't say they're critical over-the-top games, but they're pretty important. And, you know, that sets the tone for as you go along here. So there's still a lot of question of how good this team is. I think when this group is healthy, and for the most part, which has been a big part of their success, they have been. If this group stays healthy, I feel like they can play with anybody in the league.
And I want to talk about the Raptors' two sophomore players. If we had had this conversation at just after the summer league, it would have been the total reverse, and we probably did have it right before the season. Terrence Ross coming out of Vegas summer league was terrible. People were concerned, and things weren't looking good for Terrence. Jonas Valanciunas was the MVP of Vegas summer league and looked tremendous. Roles have almost flipped now. There's a lot of concern with the way Jonas has been playing of late. Terrence Ross is everybody's favorite Raptor, scoring the 51 points, was back in the dunk contest again last night, and has really taken the opportunity with Rudy Gay being gone and really made something of it, because it seems like he has a lot more freedom to not be afraid of making that mistake. Where Jonas, he had a spark after that trade, but it seems to have kind of been like a flame. It's kind of got big, then small. Just your thoughts on those two guys.
I would disagree with that premise. I would say that Valanciunas has been the more consistent player for the Raptors this year. And Terrence Ross, there's been a lot of nights where it's been kind of quiet. Then there's other nights where he's brilliant. I think Valanciunas, you know, He's got a long way to go. He needs to continue to polish his post-game, you know, in terms of the back to the basket and the face-up and being consistent in that regard in terms of what kind of moves he's going to use, what's his counter going to be. But I kind of like where he's going. I think from year one to year two for a 21-year-old big man, and usually big men don't come around until their mid-late 20s, man, I think he's going to be, he's already one of the best centers in the East. And I think if he continues on the path he's going, he's going to end up being one of the better centers in the NBA. And I think he's been pretty consistent. You know, again, he's not even close to ready. He's got a long, long way to go. But man, oh man, for a 21-year-old second-year player, I really like what I see. I think from Ross, the opportunity's been there since Rudy Gay got traded, and I think he's really taken advantage of it. I love how hard he's competing defensively. He still has to improve his ability to get his own shot, and when people really body him, can he get by people? Can he finish at the rim with contact? You know, those are all things that are still works in progress for him. And then there are nights that he's just, you know, still in la-la land where he's not there, where you have, you know, you get 4 or 5 points from him, and, you know, you need to play John Salmons more or your 2 point guards more or whatever the case may be. So I think when I look at the Raptors, James, the key to their team when they're fully healthy are the two inconsistent spots, quite frankly. Terrence Ross, when he plays at a high level, and Amir Johnson, when he plays at a high level, they can play with anybody in the league. And now, can they beat those teams consistently? Maybe not, but they can play with anybody. When Terrence Ross is inconsistent, when Amir Johnson is inconsistent, they really struggle. And I think that when I look at Lowry, DeRozan, and Valanciunas, I would grade those guys higher right now in terms of consistency than I would the other two.
You mentioned Amir Johnson, and he sat out a couple games. It seems like he's a bit banged up. Nothing new when it comes to Amir. He seems to always have those struggles and be banged up. One of the guys who's been impressive coming over from that trade with Rudy Gay, and not the guy that I think everyone picked. I think we talked earlier about Vasquez. I think that was the guy Raptor fans were excited about. But I think Patrick Patterson has been the guy that stood out the most of the four guys that have come over. How would you feel about flipping the two roles if Patrick Patterson was your starter and Amir Johnson was the guy coming off the bench? Because we know Amir, it's not going to bother him. He's not one of those vain players that needs to kind of hear his name called and the whole starter versus coming off the bench thing.
Well, first of all, I think the fact that you bring this up, I think we all recognize that Amir's ideal role is as the first big coming off the bench for a team. I mean, that's in the best of worlds where the Raptors have a starting power forward. But Amir Johnson right now is their starting power forward. And I think even with all due respect to Patrick Patterson, I think both he and Amir are better suited being that first forward off the bench. Do I see Patrick Patterson as a starting power forward on an elite playoff team? I'm not ready to say that yet. You know, so I think that what you have is you have two guys that are terrific third big men, but one of them has to start and the other guy's going to play a lot of minutes. And I think more so than anything else, I think Amir wears down as the season goes on. And again, I think that when he's got to play a ton of minutes, you know, not only does he break down in terms of some of the nicks and knacks that he has, the bang-ups that he has, I just think he wears down physically. But the guy gives you in every night. He's one of my all-time favorites, him and DeMar. And again, he's a wonderful person. You know, so I just think, when he's feeling fresh, when he's sharper, he's really good. And again, this is not a 60-win team. If they were, he'd be the third big, but they're not. So he's more than adequate as your starting power forward. So I like him there. And again, I think now after the All-Star break, when he's ready to play, he's going to be back to playing at a really high level. I'm very confident of that. He'll be fresh as a daisy. He'll be flying all over the court. You'll see those second, third, fourth effort plays that he makes. I just think it's a long season. And I think based upon his body type and, how he's, just his makeup and how he's built, I think, I'll give you an example. It's kind of like the baseball example. He's a guy that should probably throw 150 innings. But when you're asking him to throw 200, 225 innings, his ERA is going to go up. He's not going to be as efficient. And I think that's Amir. I mean, I really think he's a guy that is better suited, but that's not what the situation is right now. So you just make do and you make the best of it. And again, I think Terrence Ross, this is his first time really playing. So he's going to be inconsistent because he doesn't know how to push himself through yet mentally and be there for you every night. I mean, it's a long year and it's a true test. Last year he was kind of in and out. and it was kind of easy for him. This year, he's got to not only fight the physical fatigue, but he's got to fight the mental fatigue. So, again, I think for these guys, the All-Star break will help them, particularly Amir. And, again, keep an eye on it. I'm a firm believer. When you watch the Raptors and when Amir and Terrence Ross are at a high level, man, they're tough to beat.
Yeah, when anyone's scoring 51 points, it's tough to beat. Actually, they didn't win that game.
Well, not even that. I mean, they lost that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope people remember they lost that game. So I'm more so of the belief that it's one of those situations where when they're going to play with the Indiana Pacers of the world or the Miami Heats of the world, a Washington or a Chicago and teams like that, and the Nets, and you're going to beat those teams or, you know, go nose to nose with them in a great game. When those guys are good, they're real. The Raptors again, but I think because you know Lowry's going to be there for you most nights, DeRozan's going to be there for you most nights. You know, Valanciunas's offense still might not be as polished as people want. I'll tell you what. He's going to rebound. He's going to be very physical. Yeah, foul trouble is going to be an issue occasionally, but that's more a byproduct of how the game's being called right now, and he's still only a second-year player, so he doesn't have enough reputation yet where he doesn't get the due respect that he will get in time. But I think that, again, when you look at this team from their starting five, when those two other guys are getting it done, and they're getting the productivity that we know they can get from the bench. Again, this team's pretty fun to watch.
And one last little thing about Terrence, since we brought him up again. Last year, once he came back after winning the slam dunk and all that, things really seemed to take a dip for him. You think the fact he has that experience in his back pocket now, we see a different Terrence coming out of the break? Because last year, it really seemed like that's where he kind of dipped. It kind of went downhill real fast after the All-Star break.
I think some of that was mental. You know, some of that was like people patting him on the back and all that nonsense. I think this year is more so, I think it'll help him. I think it's going to help his confidence. And I'll tell you what, Kyle Lowry will be all over him. DeMar DeRozan will be all over him. Dwayne Casey, John Salmons, Chuck Hayes, they will be in him if he doesn't come ready to play. You know what I'm saying? So last year he was just like, all right, whatever, you're some kid. You're a bit part. You're not that important anyway. This year, they need him. So he's got a bigger piece of the puzzle now, and guys will call him out if he's not ready to play. So I'm not worried about that. I think that you know, will he have nights still where he's inconsistent? Yes, definitely, because he's still learning. He's not even close to ready to be that star player that Raptor fans would like. But, you know, he's starting to put together more and more nights where you go, ooh, man, I like what I'm seeing. This kid's got a chance in a few years to be really good.
And then the last thing before I let you go, in this country, we do not get a full-day NBA trade deadline show, so we'll have our own little mini-show right here. What is it the Raptors need out of this trade deadline, in your opinion? Because you said they could stand pat, they could be buyers. I think the sellers is probably out, as you said, unless they get a really great deal. You mentioned a lot about the four spot. Do we see maybe them try and get something there?
Well, again, what are you giving up to get, though? And that's the challenge, you know, and I think it's going to be difficult to get a major deal done. It might be just a tweak, but I think it'll be difficult to do anything further than what you've been able to do. But you know what? Things stay really quiet with Masai Ujiri, and I like that. And then, bang, it happens. So, you know, I think he's done a really nice job with the Bargnani and Gay trades, because what it's done is it's really given Valanciunas with the Bargnani trade and Amir Johnson an opportunity to really have a bigger piece of the puzzle. And if I'm going to lose, if I'm Dwayne Casey in the last year of my contract, and if I'm going to get fired, I want to get fired with Valanciunas and Amir Johnson, not Andre Bonyan, because I know those guys are going to give it to me. So I think the Andre Bonyani trade helped put guys in positions where they have to play more minutes and they have a bigger piece of the puzzle. And I think it's helped their organization. And on top of that, then, the Rudy Gay trade has helped develop Terrence Ross. It's force-fed him, which has been good for him. It's also been great for a guy like DeRozan, because now, after maybe struggling the first time around as being the quote-unquote guy, this time around, it's helped him, it's forced him to say, all right, here you go again. This time you got to produce, and he's been a lot better. Has he been perfect? Far from it, but he's getting better. And then, last but not least, the ball has been put in Kyle Lowry's hands now and basically been told, you are the guy. This is your team. You finally have a team to run, and guys are going to play off of you. You're not playing off of Rudy Gay. The guys are playing off of your actions, not you playing off of them. And so those two moves have really transformed this organization. And, you know, obviously adding the second unit that they've added really helped them dramatically. So whatever move Masai Ujiri makes, whether it's a buy, a hold, or a sell, I have faith it's being done for the right reasons long term, not necessarily what you need short term.
And if you believe the reports out there, the Andrea Bargnani trade helped us twice, because they made it. And then apparently the reason why the Knicks backed out of trading for Kyle Lowry was the fact that Masai Ujiri burned them on the Bargnani trade and burned them on the Carmelo trade. So you get it.
No, it's a great point you make, James, and I would happen to agree with you. And I think if you're the Knicks right now, you're absolutely punching yourself for not making that Lowry trade. And a lot of times, the best trades are the ones you'd end up not making. And I think if you're Masai Ujiri, you're probably grateful that the Knicks bailed out on it.
And then one last thing before I let you go. We were talking about a lot of comparisons to the past and things that have happened in the past with this organization. One of the things that is different, though, the ownership is different. And at the top, you have Tim Lewicki. And normally, I wouldn't put a lot of stock into it, but you're a casual fan of Toronto FC. They've spent a lot of money on their team. And for Raptor fans, that might be a good sign that, you know what, this is a team that has always steered away from being a luxury tax team. It seems like the credo at the top is not as concerned with the amount of money spending as long as they're getting quality for it. Would you agree?
I totally agree. I think Tim Lewicki, he wants to win. First, last, everything in between. He wants to win. So, and he has come in here with the blessing of ownership, Larry Tannenbaum and the folks at Bell and Rogers, that, yeah, you know what? I'm not here to lose. We're here to win. And I want full support that when I need to spend the money, I'm going to have the ability to do that. You know, so there is no doubt in my mind. I mean, the Leafs can't go any further because it's a hard cap in the NHL. But we've already seen it with FC that they're blowing people out of the water with their spending. And when the time comes, and I don't see that right now, but at the right time when, you know, the Raptors feel like they're ready to make that defining move, there's no doubt in my mind that there will be the commitment we need to go into the luxury tax to get over the hump. I have every bit of faith that that will happen. You know, so because of what we've seen already from Toronto FC and from all indications of what I've seen from Tim and Masai, that, you know, but it's a plan. It's not going to be overnight. It's going to be a calculated, very sound analytical plan where you're just going to be very cautious and move in the right direction and then pounce when that defining moment comes to truly pounce and get the guy you want. But it's not going to be a knee-jerk thing. spending for the sake of spending. That's not going to happen. It's going to be more so, you know, for the right reason.
Indeed. And along with that spending, I will say Jack Armstrong deserves a huge raise because he does a wonderful job and does a great job on the broadcast. And we need high-quality broadcasts now that we have a high-quality team.
Well, thank you, James. I'm fooling you, too, so it's all good.
Not at all, Jack. Thanks for your time, as always. This is fun. And normally the next annual chat is about the lottery balls and who we're going to draft. It might not be this year, Jack. I'm confident in saying that probably isn't going to be the case for this team, and that's nice to say.
Well, if they're healthy, I would agree with you. I would totally agree that, again, if they're a healthy team, I would fully expect that they're in the playoffs. So that's a positive development, and I think you learn a lot and you develop a lot by winning. You know, the one cautionary tale I would say is that I do think Boston and Philadelphia are positioned in the Atlantic Division to truly, over the next few years, make dramatic change and improve significantly. So the wins will become more difficult in the Eastern in the Atlantic Division as the Eastern Conference as well, particularly if we get some of these elite guys in our conference. And you'll see, beginning to see, too, you'll start to see a gradual shift of power from one conference to another if teams like Milwaukee and Orlando and Boston and Philly are able to get high picks.
Yeah, just quickly, this is rock bottom for the East, is it not? I can't imagine it getting worse than it has been this year.
No, you're probably right. And but, you know, think back years ago when you had the Celtics, the Hawks, the Cavs. I'm trying to think here. I'm forgetting one team. That, you know, there were so many great teams in the East. The Bulls, you know, the Knicks. You know, I don't know if I mentioned the Pistons. I mean, it was loaded. So you could be in a 4, 5, 6 seed, and it was a tough conference to be in. Now it's that way in the West. So again, but the system works. It really does. If you have good management and good coaching, and you end up getting high picks little by little, when you acquire those stars and you develop people around them, then you start to really make it happen. So I think it'll work out really well for them.
Well, the short term looks very bright. We'll hope the long term is as well. And thank you, as always, for taking a tremendous amount of time to talk with us. But it is always fun. And I know each and every time people get a lot out of when you come on here and talk with me, so I appreciate that on not only my own behalf, but on behalf of them, because they tell me they enjoy it and they like it, so we keep bringing you back. I would anyway, though, Jack, but the fact that people like it as well, that's good.
Well, my pleasure, James. Always enjoy coming on with you, and all the best, and fingers crossed here, these final 30 games are a lot of fun for Raptor fans.
All right, then, Jack, and enjoy the curling at the Olympics and all of that and what's going on. And, you know, maybe 2018, Jack, you can get your team in there. And
I'm not that talented.
Okay. Well, I was just giving you a thought for retirement or whenever, you know. Be an Olympian. You never know. All right, then. But we will catch up with you down the line, and thanks so much, Jack.
James, my pleasure.